Good morning. Was it raining when you came in? It started at the 9 o'clock service, about halfway. I think it was the first song. It just started pouring. We were dry, so I feel good about that. And I brought an umbrella today, so I even feel better. Anyway, I'm Rusty, I'm pastor here, and I'm glad that we're together on campus. There are some that stayed at home to stay dry, and then others will be watching on demand later in the week. And however we do it, I'm really glad we can be together. You'll notice, some of you, that there's some sparkly stuff in the carpet. There's probably some confetti around. This place was rocking last night. The whole downstairs was full of families and little kids having a great time. Our children's ministry put on this thing called Jingle Jam, and it was a riot. We use this place quite a bit, so if you ever notice that there's some odd things floating around, that's because it gets used. And we don't apologize for that. But if you got sparkly things on you when you leave, ask someone when you leave and they'll brush them off. It's an interesting season. I love Christmas. I still, in a lot of ways, feel like a kid when Christmas comes. And one of the things that happens, though, is that kind of on full display, we see people's wants and desires. And all of us have them. Some of us are too cool to admit it, but there are things that we want. I'm just thinking about Christmas presents, but this season kind of brings that out. I mean, all of us want to be, like to be comfortable. We like to be healthy. We like to be happy. We like to have a life that's a little bit more together than not together. Most of us would say we don't want to be wealthy, but we would like about 10% more than we currently have. The guy that just signed that $700 million deal with the Dodgers, most of us say, I don't need that much. $70 million would be fine with me. $7 million would be fine. But most of us, we kind of live with these wants and desires that float around. And this is the season that gets put on steroids, because, like, if you watch football or any sporting event today, you're going to be bombarded with all kind of ads that are trying to basically do this one thing. They want you to be discontent with what you currently have. There's never an ad that says, you don't need what we're selling. You're fine. It's always, your car or your shoes or something to make me think, oh, I've got to have that, or my neighbor's got that. Or, I mean, we all have these kind of things that they can be tapped into. And we need to be really careful about it. I did this in the first service, and it was a bit embarrassing, but, like, I really love Eddie Bauer. Maybe you don't know who. Eddie Bauer makes clothes. This is an Eddie Bauer shirt. And I didn't realize how, like, I'm kind of addicted to Eddie Bauer. If I'm ever driving and I see an Eddie Bauer outlet, I have to stop. And I usually come out of the store with something that I maybe didn't need. I got this in the mail this week. I can get 50% off at Eddie Bauer online or at the store. Who doesn't want 50% off? And I'll go. And the weird thing is, I've actually purchased things that I already had and I didn't realize it. Becky said, you should have told me you're using that today, because I've got two of these blue shirts you bought, not realizing you had, and I didn't even know they were blue. They could have been black for all I knew. I get caught up in the moment, and I could say 50%, but the truth is I probably do better saving 100%. Just don't buy anything. But I can't do that because it's Eddie Bauer. And if you've not been there, they just have, well, anyway, I can ding other people, but when I look at myself, I'm just a sucker for some of this. And this season kind of brings that out in us. And it's okay to have these, wants and desires. They're fine. It's just that we get in trouble when they start running our life. And it's one thing to say you bought a $20 shirt or whatever. It's another when these wants and desires end up mortgaging your future and having huge implications. And so we're going to look at this week. And then it's actually two parts this week and next week. And I thought I'd tell you a story that kind of highlights this idea of wants and desires and shows how it shows up in our lives. Like, there was a story of a teenager, grew up in a large family. He had a number of older brothers. He was the youngest. And large families are fine. This particular family is pretty dysfunctional. The father, especially the father, favored the youngest son. And parents, if you have more than one kid, and even if you have one, don't spoil them. Don't indulge everything for them, because you're not setting them up for success. And in this case, the older brothers saw how the father doted on this younger one. And as time went on, it just created a lot of bitterness and envy and jealousy. And it created created a huge mess. I want to tell you a little bit about the story. You can read this in Genesis, the first book in the Old Testament. It's the story of Joseph and his family. And I want to tell you one of the events that happened in Joseph's life. He's a young teenager, and he's naive. It's not that he didn't have character. It's just that it hadn't been honed in real-world experience yet. And because he had been kind of spoiled and was treated as extra special by his dad, he just didn't have the kind of discernment he needed. And an instance of that happens is he has had this dream. And in this dream, his parents and his brothers all come down and bow down before him. He couldn't control having the dream, but he should have controlled who he told it to and when. But see, he was the special one. He was the one that was catered to. So he went and told all of his family together. This is what it says in Genesis 37. It says, "This time he told the dream to his father as well as to his brothers, but his father scolded him," probably the first time he'd ever been corrected. Scolded him. He goes, "What kind of dream is that? Will your mother and I and your brothers actually come and bow to the ground before you?" The father was probably embarrassed, a bit put off by it, but again, he had played into this whole drama. He goes, "But while his brothers were jealous of Joseph, his father wondered what the dreams meant." The father knew there might be something to this, but it never should have been shared publicly, but it was. And what it did is it got the older brothers, they were just livid. They'd already had enough of this kid being treated special and them not being treated the same way. And now it just had made it worse and worse and worse. They were angry at the father. They disliked their brother. And even though it was immature on his part, it wasn't anything malicious that he did, they decided the best thing they could do is get rid of him. So their intention was to kill him. Best way to get rid of a problem. It would be permanent. And so they decided they gathered forces, they kidnapped him, and they were going to kill him off, way off on the farm. And prior to killing him, another opportunity arose. And that was they had a chance to sell him to a foreign country where he could become a slave there, would be completely out of their hair. They could make a little bit of cash. He's gone, and they don't have to live with on their conscience that they murdered him. So they sell him. He's off now, going to become a slave. They take his jacket, they rub some sheep blood on it, go tell the dad he was killed in this terrible accident with a wild animal, and the dad grieves, and the brothers are enjoying every bit of it. They're now free of this young kid. Now Joseph's stuck. He's in a foreign country. He's living in Egypt now. He's a slave, has absolutely no rights. Completely away from everything he knew. He's gone from being the spoiled one to being absolutely, have no advocates at all. And he gets sold into slavery to one of the top government officials. He had no control over that, but he, as you read the story, you find out he, instead of focusing on being a victim and the injustice that happened to him, and some people do this and they get just wrapped up in self-pity, we don't see Joseph doing that. Did he want to be away from it? Absolutely. Did he want to be free and back home? Yes, but he couldn't control that right then. So he's now a slave. He's in this household with a bunch of slaves, and he just does his best to do what he's asked to do. As time goes on, he develops skills. You remember, he was the spoiled younger brother. He's developing some skills. He's learning how life works. He's building relationships with the others. And he elevates himself up to where he comes to a point where he's the head of all the household servants and slaves. Had he just remained being bitter and always trying to run away whenever he could, this wouldn't have happened. But he made the most of the circumstances he was in. And a bad situation, but he's made the best of it. And it looks like things are going okay. Well, the owner's wife has also noticed Joseph. And she decides she has a few extra duties she would like for him to do. She wants them done, obviously, when her husband's away, but she's got her eyes set on him. Joseph's brothers had some wants and desires. They wanted to be treated fairly. They didn't want to have favoritism for someone else. And then when they couldn't change their father's attitude and all that, they wanted to get rid of the problem, which was Joseph, and they did. Joseph's here. He's got choices to make. And as he's working in this household as the head of the slaves, the wife of the owner has some wants and desires too. She wants a little more fun in her life. She wants some excitement, even maybe a little danger. She wants to show she has control and power. She wants to feel like she's in charge, and so she goes after Joseph. Joseph's now in a tough place. If he refuses her, he can get in big trouble because she's got all kind of power. He has none. If he accommodates her, then he's got other issues. And Joseph doesn't want to jeopardize the fact that he might be able to work his way out of slavery and earn his freedom and be able to go back home. He doesn't want to get her mad at him, but he also has some integrity, and he realizes that it would be wrong for me to have any kind of liaison with her because she's married. Joseph had a worldview that was governed by God's word, and he knew marriage is a sacred thing. You don't commit adultery. He knew that sex is a fine. I'm sure he was a normal guy. Sexual desires are normal, but he also knew that he need to be within the guardrails. One man, one woman, married. So he tells her no. She's not very pleased by that. She doesn't like to be disrespected. And when she realizes finally he absolutely means it, he wasn't ugly to her, he wasn't disrespectful, but he was not going to compromise, even at the risk of him losing his position. He just wasn't willing to do it. Big part of that because the God that he loved and followed would have been disrespected. What she does when she realizes that this slave is not respecting her wishes, is not giving in to her, not caught up in her aura, she accuses him of rape, and word gets out. And now he's in big, big trouble. Her husband comes home, finds out what has happened, and now he's got some choices to make. He has wants and desires too. He wants to do what is right. He's noticed Joseph, and Joseph has been good. And my guess is, we don't know all of this in the story, but I think he knows a little bit about his wife. And my guess is this isn't the first time she had tried to make a move on one of the household slaves. He didn't want to feed that in her, but at the same time, he had a reputation too. He was a high-up official in the government. If he just let it go, now he's got problems. He wants to keep his image intact. He also seems to have respect for Joseph. I think he knew. Joseph said he didn't do this. I believe him, but I've got to do something here. So what he does, instead of having Joseph executed, which is what in that culture would have been the first thing that people would have gone to, he sends Joseph to prison, spares his life, but now he's going to languish in prison, unjustly dealt with again. So he's gone from being the youngest brother, favored, to being a slave, to now being a prisoner and having zero advocates. There's no one watching out for him except the God that he has trusted. We don't know how long he was in prison, but it was several years. And there are a variety of relationships that he builds there. There were a number of things that happened, and all of them have worked to change him from being this naive teenager to being a man that is skilled, understands human nature, a guy that's wise, a guy that has made choices to continue to build integrity. And we see no evidence of him faltering in that. And the Bible's pretty clear. The Bible, I love the Bible because it doesn't spin or airbrush its heroes and heroines. It shows their strengths and their weaknesses. And in this case, what we see is he's decided, he's put his trust in God, and he's not going to waver in that, even though shortcuts and compromises would have made his life easier, at least in the short run. There are a handful of things in this story that are really important for us to grab hold of. And one of those is, what I want is not always what I need. And it's easy for us to confuse these things. We can say, well, if I want it, I really, there was a car company several years ago that they started their commercial off. I can't remember what company it was. It says, and the announcer would say, you want this car. And they show you all kind of pictures of it and the new technology and all that kind of, you want this car, you want this car. And then it changed to, you need this car. You really need it. And you can just see people in front of their TV going, well, that's right. I really need the best car. A year from now, it's going to be outdated technology, but I need it now. And they're going to help me with good financing, and I'll be paying on it for 7 years, but I need that car. It just feeds something in us. And it takes some discipline to take what I want and desire and to kind of filter it with, do I really need it or not, now or ever? And followers of Jesus, we ought to really get this. We ought to be aware of this. God rescued us from our own self-centeredness. You know, Jesus came. We're celebrating his birth, and we know a lot of the story. It's God didn't come for us just to help us be nicer. He didn't come just to kind of show us a better way to live. He came to rescue us and to free us from our sin. It's like we had an incurable disease, and unless there was a donor, someone that could give us what, we're toast. And so Jesus came to rescue us from our sinful nature that leads us astray over and over and over again. We needed healing, we needed forgiveness. And with that, we need the ability to move away from self-centeredness into what is wise and good and true. And that means filtering our wants and desires so that we're not driven by them. We live with them, but we don't live by them. In James 4, there's a really interesting passage here. This is a letter written to a church and trying to help them understand there's a reason that they have all these quarrels and bickering and fighting and division among them. And James goes and says this. He goes, you're doing all this. He goes, you don't have what you want because you don't ask God for it. In other words, you're trying your own way to make things happen. You don't have what you want because you haven't asked God. And he goes, and even when you do ask, you don't get it because your motives are all wrong. You only want what will give you pleasure. Our wants and desires many times are focused purely on self-interest. Some of you have already purchased elaborate Christmas gifts for some people. I don't know if any of you all bought cars and put a bow on it. I see those commercials. No one's ever given me a car for Christmas. Maybe you did. I don't know. Maybe you got one. Maybe you're giving them one. But, you know, even sometimes our most extravagant gifts, it's not so much to benefit the other person, but it's how we get appreciated by having done it. Self-interest weaves its way in all kinds of things for us. And we need to remember that. We need to recognize this is the way I'm wired. And in the big things and the little ones, I need to be willing. Like it says, I need to go to God and just ask him for help. Help me to sort through this. What are my intentions? What is my real motive in this? I need to, one thing about having the Bible is the Bible helps me understand God's will. And then I can pray specifically, God, what do you want me to do in this circumstances, whether it's a little small thing or a big one? Because quite honestly, the little ones lead us to making the bigger decisions. That's how we get into habits. Joseph's brothers had some choices. They were irritated that their younger brother was being favored. They had some other ways they could have dealt with it. One is they could have gone to their dad and said, Dad, time out. This isn't fair. You're treating him differently than you do us. Do you understand what's going on? Some of us are in families where dysfunction just continues generationally because no one will ever stop and just ask a question. And some of these brothers could have said, you know, if this is the way it's going to continue, because I'm getting wrapped around the axle about, maybe it'd be better for me to move off and have my own place. You see, there are other ways they could have dealt with their wants and desires to be treated fairly. But instead, they just chose the most immediate answer, and that was, let's get rid of Joseph. That will cure our problem. Maybe. What about our wants and desires? And we're going to tie in some more of this next week, but God really does get us well. When Jesus was teaching about how to pray, we call it the Lord's Prayer. It's actually a model for prayer in Matthew. He says this before he gets to it. He goes, when you pray, don't babble on and on as the Gentiles do, meaning people that don't know God. They think their prayers are answered merely by repeating their words again and again. And some of us do this. We have these memorized kind of prayers we do. Some of us do it at mealtime. Some of us have others. It's just rote. Like Stacy was saying, there are Christmas carols that we sing. We haven't really thought about what they mean, but we've just gotten used to it. He said, don't do that. Jesus said, don't be like them, for your Father knows exactly what you need even before you ask him. This is really important to get. He doesn't need me to inform him about what's really going on. He already knows. Now, he wants me to have communication with him. He wants there to be this relationship, but he dearly loves his children. I mean, he paid the highest price so that we could have our sin forgiven, be healed, and brought into his family as his kids. There is nothing that he would hold back from us that would be absolutely good for us. If I can trust him with my life now and eternally, doesn't it make sense that I could trust him with my daily life today? And to take my wants and my desires, my dreams and hopes, and take those to him and trust him to handle that well for me on my behalf? The answer for anyone that knows him is the answer is yes. But we slide into some other stuff. And there's another caveat to this is that when I want something good, that doesn't mean it's always the right time for it. There are some things that are good that God wants us to have, but it's not the time yet. When I was about 4, I wanted to drive. I'd been around people that drove, thought it was pretty cool. The horn, you know, there's so many cool things you could do, and I thought, well, why can't I drive? Now, in West Virginia, you had to be 5 to drive. I was only 4. But, you know, the fact that I wanted to didn't mean it would have been a smart move to let me have the keys to the car, does it? How many people do you hear about winning the lottery that are broke within the first year? They haven't learned how to handle money. That's why they're buying all these lottery tickets, because they're thinking, if I can just get a bunch of money, I'll be fine. But if I don't know how to handle a little bit of money, I'm not going to have the skills to handle a lot of it. And not all of them, but many of them do go broke. Because they don't have the basic skills. It's not time for them to have it until they've learned some things. Marriage is a great thing. It's not for everyone, but many people will get married, but that doesn't mean that you're ready right now to get married or that the person you're thinking of is ready. It's a matter of learning and maturing and waiting for the right time. We know this intuitively, but a lot of times our wants and desires grab hold of us and we jettison wrestling with it because we just want to be satisfied now. Another thing we learned in this story of Joseph is that while you and I trust and wait on God, he is at work, whether we see it or not, he is at work on what is best for me and for others. He's constantly working. When you and I decide we're going to choose to trust God right now with our daily life, this moment, there's some things we'll discover along the way if we are patient. Here's one of them. We're going to learn that God knows more about the situations than you and I do. He knows all about me, about my circumstances now, what's coming. He knows about the people involved. He knows the whole story. He knows past, present, and future in real time. And so while my wants and desires may be pushing me to want to go a direction, he knows what is absolutely best. And to depend on him, to trust in him, and to hold on to him is never a waste of time. God always knows what's best. And he will always do right is the third thing. He will always do right by me, and I can expect his best if I humbly and patiently trust and obey him. The idea of being humble and patient, they fly in the face of a culture that is very fast-paced and says, I deserve it now. I'll give you an example that happened a few years back. I've used this story before, and a guy that I was asked to coach him, he was going to start a church in Woodbridge. And a good guy. He was, on paper, he had all the skills and he had some experience, and it just looked like this would be a great fit. So I was asked to come in and coach him. And things were going really well. Best I could tell, this was going to be a home run. And he came in my office one day and he goes, I just need to tell you that I've quit. I'm done. Not doing it anymore. And I said, why? Everything seemed to be going so well. And he goes, and why didn't you tell me earlier? We could have talked it through. He goes, no, I was afraid you talked me out of it. I've made up my mind. And the reason he wanted to quit is because he had gathered a group of about 20 people. Most of them were not Christians. But they were willing to come to an investigative Bible study and learn about the faith. And he goes, I don't know what to do with them. I'm out of here. In my mind, I'm thinking, this is like the perfect scenario. Look what you've done. You've gathered some people that are curious and inquisitive, and they're wanting some answers. I mean, this is perfect. But for him, you see, his wants and desires were this. He wanted to be in a circumstance where he was in charge, he was in control, and he knew everything that was going to happen. And this was striking fear in him. He didn't want fear. He didn't want uncertainty. He didn't want what's going to happen next. He wanted control. He wanted comfort. So he quit. A few weeks later, he came on a men's retreat with us. And while he was on the men's retreat, in several of the breaks, some of the guys came up to him and said, by the way, our family's thinking about joining you when you start your church. We live in that area. We'd like to be a part of it with you. Several people came up to him and told him that. And he caught me later and he goes, do you think I quit too early? And the answer was a resounding, I didn't have to say it, the answer was a resounding yes. You see, in the moment, his wants and desires drove him because he wanted comfort, he wanted security, he wanted convenience, he wanted control. He didn't see what God was providing. Now, he's done well since then. But I wonder how many times we miss God's best because we discount what he can do and we're being driven more by our wants and our desires. I want to read this passage. This is from Isaiah. This is a phenomenal passage with promise to it. It says, have you never heard? Have you never understood? The Lord is the everlasting God, the creator of all the earth. Sometimes I think we forget how big God is, that everything that's been created has his fingerprints on it. And he's eternal. He's been around a long time. It goes on to say, he never grows weak or weary. No one can measure the depths of his understanding. There is no one wiser than our Creator, Savior God. It says, he gives power to the weak and strength to the powerless. Even youths will become weak and tired, and young men will fall in exhaustion. He's saying, you can take the greatest specimens of human physicality or intellect and all that, and eventually they're going to reach their limit. They're not going to have what it takes to sustain for the long haul. He says, but those who trust in the Lord will find new strength. They will soar high on wings like eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not faint. God will take care of his kids. And we can count on it. But it comes down to, am I really going to trust him, or if I'm just going to go my way and trust myself? Am I going to just let my wants and my desires and my fears rule me? We can count on God to be with us regardless of our circumstances. He will, in the promises, he will either change the circumstances or he'll change us to meet them. But he will not abandon us. Philippians 4 is a promise that would really be worth memorizing. It says, "And this same God who takes care of me will supply all your needs from his glorious riches, which have been given to us in Christ Jesus." The moment I accept Jesus, I have every resource of God at my disposal. Not how I want it used, but I can count on God using it for the absolute best for me and those around me if I choose to humbly trust and follow him. I told you the story of Joseph. Let me fast forward a little bit of that. His brothers have sold him into slavery. He gets sold. He works his way up into the hierarchy and is doing really well until he doesn't go along with the boss's wife. He gets thrown in prison, and he's there for several years. And while he's there, there is no hint of him just focusing on self-pity or bitterness or this kind of thing. He builds some relationships there, and along the way meets a couple of political appointees that have been jailed. And it's a fascinating story. It sounds like it just ripped out of the Washington Post. But he ends up, there's a circumstance that happens nationally, and the king is really concerned about what's happening. And he gets word of Joseph and some skills Joseph has. Joseph meets with the king. He actually offers wisdom that rescues the nation. So he goes from being a prisoner to now being a key advisor to the king. It's really fascinating to see. And as time goes on, the nation's rescued. They're grateful to Joseph, and all seems to be going well. And then there's a famine that hits it, and Egypt is set up for it because of what Joseph had done. But all the outlying regions are hit really hard. And so one of those groups is where he was from. And his brothers, who are now older, end up coming to try to find food and resources. They heard that, kind of like we see people coming across our border here to get help because they don't have it at home. They come to Egypt, and they ended up, Joseph finds out it's them. They don't recognize him because he's now older. They thought, as a slave, he was probably dead by now. He finds out who they are, eventually reveals himself to them, doesn't kill them, and his family and all come and live in Egypt, and they're protected and provided for. And then when his father dies, the brothers are pretty convinced that Joseph's going to off them now. They're reading into what they would have done to, actually what they did do to him. They were thinking he's going to do the same thing and worse, and he had the power to do it. They have this meeting, and the brothers are just scared to death, saying, "Are you going to kill us now?" And they knew they deserved it. And this is what Joseph says to them. Genesis 50:20 says, "You intended to harm me, but God intended it all for good. He brought me to this position so I could save the lives of many people." He doesn't exonerate his brothers. They were evil in what they did. They were wrong. They were self-centered. There was nothing about what they did that was right. But the thing is nobody can interfere with God's plans in my life except me. My choices matter. If I trust and obey him, nobody can interfere with it. And Joseph is saying, I see how God has been working through all these years and all the suffering and the injustices I put up with. And while your intention was evil only, look what God has done. He offers to forgive his brothers. And instead of being driven by the want to get revenge, he chooses to love them and their families and care about them and honor God in the process. This same God is available to you and me. Some of you, if you've been treated horribly. In fact, right now you're dealing with some injustices that it would be easy to focus your attention on how do I get even, overtly or covertly. Some of you are in families that you can't even talk to each other. Or you've lost jobs because of unfair practices. And some of us have made bad choices. We're kind of like the older brothers. We've done some things that we're ashamed of, but we feel it's pretty much ruined us. And all I can say about that is there's a God that knows us fully well. and right now will take us and will take us as we are. And he'll do something with our lives that is beyond anything we could imagine. He can heal, he can redeem, he can forgive, and he can use us to make a difference in a broken world. The choice is, will I surrender my wants and desires to his will? Follow him and watch what he can do. Would you pray with me? Father, thank you for keeping this story about Joseph intact. Help us to not just be interested in the human relationships of it or just some basic principles, but help us to see in Joseph's story who you are and what it is you offer. And to see ourselves in this, whoever we identify most with. And to recognize, God, that you know us completely. You know everything that we have been through, are going through, or will. You know our faults, you know our failings, our hurts, our hopes. And you invite us to come to you. You have open arms that if we will come to you, you will take us as we are. You will restore, you will strengthen, you will help us. You'll give us courage. Over time, you will show just how wise it is to trust in this Creator God that came for us. I pray that you would help us to wrestle well with our desires and our drives and our hopes and our wants. And we would come to a place of realizing that surrendering all of them to you is the absolute best and wisest place we could ever be. Please speak to us today and the rest of this week. Help us to listen. In Christ's name, amen.